On this episode, we discuss Journey to the Mysterious Island, probably the most faithful adaptation of any Jules Verne work ever. Welcome to the Flophouse. I'm Dan McCoy.
Hey, Dan. I'm Stuart. Stuart Wellington.
Thanks for introducing yourself.
Hey, Stuart and Dan. I'm Elliot Kalin, your friend.
So it's been a while, guys. I missed you guys.
It has not been a while.
It's been, what, a couple of weeks?
We've actually been stacking these up quite a bit because here's a little peek behind the Flophouse curtain. We did a couple in a row.
Oh, I'm not dressed.
We did a couple in a row because Stuart was going to go off to Gen Con, the gaming convention.
And because Dan and I will be heading to the RNC and DNC, the corruption conventions.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Trenches.
Take that. Rage Against the Machine.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
And so forth.
So to ensure that you, the valued listener, doesn't get an interruption in their Flophouse service.
You were about to say get an erection, didn't you?
Yeah, I mean, it's just a certain level of professionalism.
I want to make sure that they do get erections.
Oh, okay.
On the regular.
On the regular?
On the regular.
Is that a phrase that anyone has ever used?
I think so.
But yeah, we've been...
People expect professionalism when they tune into the Flophouse podcast.
That's the watchword for our show.
Yep.
Professionalism.
Yep. Just like that movie with Jean Reno, The Professionalism.
Mm-hmm. It's Jean Reno?
Yeah. Jean's Reno.
If you want...
He named himself after his favorite pants.
If you want amateur professionalism, tune into another podcast.
Go somewhere else.
I thought you were going to say, go suck an egg.
Nope, because I'm not a 100-year-old man.
No, that was good stuff, though. So, I think you should keep that up.
Let's just to recap.
So to recap, Dan uses, in his everyday speech, the phrases, go suck an egg and on the regular.
Mm-hmm. Well, we've learned a lot today. Thanks for listening.
Good night, everybody.
No, for newish listeners, because I feel like we have a fair number recently.
We've been picking up listeners like a snowball rolling down a hill.
They pick up listeners, snowballs?
Well, they pick up snow.
They're probably listeners, unless they roll over like it's a deaf person hill or something.
Yeah.
All right. Fair enough. I take it back.
That's a thing, right? Deaf people hills?
Yeah, hills made out of deaf people, yeah.
This is a podcast where three guys take a look at a movie. A movie that was a critical or a financial
take a
flop.
Look at a movie. We watch it.
We watch it from front to back. We don't just,
never back to front.
We do not glance at the DVD cover and toss it out the window.
We don't just flip through the stills.
We watch a whole movie.
We watch it and we listen to it because many of these movies use sound as an element.
Yeah, a critical or a commercial flop, and then we talk about it afterwards on the air.
Yes.
Which is what we're doing now. And tonight
we do
watched...
it in a house, so it's a flop in a house.
No, I don't think that's actually the...
that's where the title comes from.
Okay. Tonight we watched a little movie called... Journey to the Mysterious Island.
Now, wait, Dan, do you mean Journey to, the Mysterious Island?
Yeah. I don't think there's a colon.
No, there isn't. Dan to say no.
I mean Journey numeral to the Mysterious Island.
So you're saying...
I don't mean Journey T-O, the Mysterious Island.
So you're saying that this is the second Flophouse movie we've watched that is a sequel that uses the number 2 instead of the word 2 in the middle of the title.
Yeah, that seems odd.
Wait, was that the Twilight movie we watched?
No, Step Up to the Streets.
Oh, right.
Not
right,
Twilight
right.
to the Moon.
Sure.
You're saying, unlike, say, Teen Wolf 2.
T-O-O.
Yeah.
Or Look Who's Talking 2. T-O-O.
Like, that's an extra Teen Wolf.
Yeah.
Although Journey to the Mysterious Island wouldn't work as well.
No, it wouldn't at all.
It doesn't make sense, but it's indicating to the viewers who are big fans of Journey 1 that... This is the second movie in the series.
Or just fans of the band Journey. Yeah. Oh, they finally made a Journey movie.
They're indicating two things. Number one, this is a sequel.
Yes.
Number two, in this one, they're not going to the center of the earth.
Which is the first movie.
They're going the numeral two.
The Mysterious Island. So that this movie is investigating a different Jules Verne book.
Yeah.
So luckily, the rest of the movie was way better than the cool title naming convention, right?
In a way, but we'll get to that.
I mean, I think it's worth noting, though. You said that it's based on a Jules Verne book. The weird thing is, this is based on a Jules Verne book that is a sequel to
20,000 Leagues Under the Sea. It's not a sequel to Journey to the Center of the Earth.
That's true.
So they're mixing and matching Jules Verne.
The original Mysterious Island, the book, also didn't have Luis Guzman as a goofy helicopter pilot.
Fair enough.
Or The Rock getting berries flicked at his pecs. So
we'll get there.
They took a lot of liberties with the established material.
Don't make the mistake that this movie made and get rid of all the best material up front.
Should we talk about what happened in this movie?
Let's discuss the plot a little bit.
Okay, now I haven't seen the original Journey to the Center of the Earth, but I assume
they go to the fucking center of the Earth.
It's about a kid and Brendan Fraser, and they go to the center of the Earth.
Yeah.
In this one, the kid is back. Brendan Fraser's not, and the kid.
Brendan Fraser's busy making furry vengeance.
Making furry vengeance and having cameos in the G.I. Joe movies.
Yeah.
Perfect.
The kid in this, who you may recognize as Peeta from the Hunger Games movie, mm-hmm. Is this irritating teen kid who intercepts a secret transmission in code that his stepdad, The Rock, not A Rock, but Dwayne The Rock Johnson.
The Rock.
Thank you.
The Rock, who doesn't go by the name The Rock anymore, but just by his real name, Dwayne Johnson, who Dwayne Johnson, his stepfather, decodes. Apparently, this message says that the book, The Mysterious Island by Jules Verne, is actually true, and Vernians, which the kid considers himself one of, and which exists in this world,
yeah,
I guess
people
believe the island was real.
People who subscribe to Verne Beat, Verne Fancy, all the time, Jules Verne magazine.
Yeah, Tiger Verne.
Yeah, sure.
Popular Verne Annex.
With the decline of the print industry, it wouldn't be as modern magazines.
Booming. Sure.
Verne is keeping that whole thing alive. Sure. GV, that's Gentleman's Vernically.
Verne Napolitan. Sure.
Yeah, play Vern.
I'm trying to think of a good Ernest-based joke. You guys might have to help me
Sports Vernestrated.
Sure.
No, well, that's the thing. In the Ernest movies, when he would say, "Know what I mean, Vern," he was talking to Jules Verne.
No kidding.
Because yeah. Jules Verne predicted so much in his literature that Ernest was assumed that Jules Verne had predicted his different adventures, going to jail, mm-hmm. camp, scaring stupid, that kind of thing.
It turned out that Jules Verne did know what he mean.
Well, only because he did write a book called Journey to the Saving of Christmas.
Yeah.
So anyway, message tells him that this island is the same island that inspired Treasure Island and mm-hmm. Gulliver's Travels. And using information in those books, by which I mean a drawing that's on the front page of each of those books, they construct a map with coordinates of where the mysterious island is.
Yeah, it's basically Goonies, right?
Yeah.
It's not basically Goonies. Goonies didn't invent finding a treasure map and then going to find the treasure.
Well, in Goonies, didn't they have like a light box in their attic?
I was bothered by the idea that like
to make a map. Didn't they find a map or something?
Were we to believe that these were first editions of all three of these major works in literature?
I assume so.
I mean, that's the real treasure, isn't it? Why do they have to go find a fucking golden volcano?
He rips out the maps and like overlays them in all three cases, and I'm like, so either these are first editions, or we live in a world where like the map has like the fake ass map for this fake ass place
has been
the same in every book.
Well, but also because those books all came out at wildly varying times.
Yeah,
like
it's
I guess
the beginning of the Mouth of Madness.
In the Mouth of Madness, when he rips the covers,
yeah.
But in each of those, Sutter Kane, the horror novelist, has designed the covers for his own books.
Okay, so
and
they
those could all be paperback first editions. That's a contemporary author, but this kid somehow has first editions of Treasure Island, Journey to the the Mysterious Island. I'm getting my
titles
mixed up.
That's not the name of the title.
No, it's just The Mysterious Island. And also Gulliver's Travels, which, correct me if I'm wrong, is way older than either of the other two books.
Yeah, I think you're right on that.
So Jonathan Swift was like, I'll just put part of this map here, and hopefully my brothers of the written word will pick up the mantle and carry my torch so that someday some whiny kid and his wrestler stepfather can go to this island. Because that's what they do. They go to Palau, which is the closest place to the island, and take up with helicopter pilot Luis Guzman and his sexy daughter, Vanessa Hudgens, who the kid...
Which is great. Like, we needed a character like that to show up at that exact moment.
Like, a character like what? A goofy character or a sexy character?
I think
or both?
A little bit of both. A Guzman Hudgens type character.
Gudgeons.
I like to think that Luis Guzman is actually Goose Man. He's bitten by a goose and he has goose powers now. So they go in the helicopter. They fly right into a storm. The helicopter gets torn apart and they land on the shores of the mysterious island.
Seems kind of boring initially, right?
A little bit. It's just this rocky shoreline. Then they travel through a cave.
But I mean, they're alive.
They are alive, yeah.
Like,
that's pretty good.
They crashed their helicopter.
They crashed a helicopter in the middle of a hurricane. And they seem none the worse for wear.
It's a movie.
It's a miracle. There's basically.
That. I mean, it is. God is obviously watching over them. That's the hidden message of Journey to the Mysterious Island.
Have you heard the good news, by the way?
Have you heard the good news? The Mysterious Island is real. The gospel, according to Michael Caine's character, who shows up soon afterwards. They're walking through they walk through a cave and they enter on a verdant paradise, waterfalls, tropical trees and whatnot, and also giant butterflies and tiny elephants, which gives the movie the title I gave it. Wrong Size Animals, the movie. Wrong Size Animals, colon, the movie, mm-hmm. based on a true story.
Yeah, of course.
Just like Hot Dog the Movie. They put the movie at the end of the title.
Oh, I thought because it was based on a true story.
Well, no, you look up at the marquee and you say, Wrong Size Animals, I want to see this exhibit. No, yeah. It's a movie.
Yeah.
But there are tiny elephants that you see for like a minute. The Rock literally picks one up, they taunt it, and then he puts it back down again. So
what are they taunting? Lou Gisman talks about it. He wants to keep it and knit it a trunk warmer.
That's true.
That's the only animal that is normally large and is small in the movie, right?
There's tiny sharks small. At one point.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
And
but the elephants were so much cuter.
That's true. Well, they got trunks and everything.
Okay, so we all agree on that, right?
Yeah, the elephants were the cutest thing in the movie.
Tiny elephant
is amazingly
cute. Newsflash.
Yeah. It goes tiny elephant, Luis Guzman, Vanessa Hudgens, and then I guess Michael Caine.
Yeah.
In order of cuteness.
Sure.
Not necessarily attractiveness, just cuteness.
Cuteness.
Adorability.
Yeah.
So they're walking through the forest. Uh-oh. They stumble on a field of giant eggs, giant lizard eggs. And there's the giant lizard. Ah, it's chasing them around. It's chasing them around. And then a
Were
giant...
we supposed to throw in sound effects there?
I mean, Dan, if you could add those in after the fact.
Chainmail.
Lizard sounds.
March.
Running.
Crush.
Running. Scared. That's sound effects, right? When you just say what's happening.
Yep.
And then a giant log on vines swings by and hits the lizard.
Yeah, some indoor shit.
A la the Ewoks. It was a trap set up by Michael Caine, the boy's grandfather, who sent them the original message to draw them to the mysterious island. It seems he's a Vernian, too, and he discovered this island and wanted to lure his son there, I assume to kill him? I don't know. Or his grandson.
I did it in code for some bullshit reason.
Yeah.
Thank you. How long have we been doing this? And you just
still,
did the Michael Caine.
Only now broke out the Mickey Morris Micklewhite.
It takes so much out of me, Stuart. That's the thing.
Yeah, you only have so much Michael Caine inside you.
Yeah. And when I lose it all, I die.
It's just like 1,000 Michael Caines, the Eddie Murphy movie.
There's a bunch of tiny Caines.
So Michael Caine tells them, it's going to be another 2 weeks until communication satellite is in a place where we can send another message. Let's explore this island. But then they find the ruins of Atlantis. It's very exciting. But uh-oh.
For like two minutes, it's exciting.
Because then the Rock notices that salt water is leaching up through the soil. Turns out this island is sinking. Michael Caine says, don't worry. It sinks all the time. We have 14 years until it sinks. And doing an amazing amount of mental math, the Rock says, nuh-uh. We've got a couple days at the most. We've got to get off this MFN island. He doesn't say MFN, but...
Yeah. But it's implied.
Yeah. And it's around...
With his posture.
It's around here when they're exploring and getting somewhere that maybe the best scene in the movie takes place where the Rock says, hey, stepson, I know you've got a crush on Vanessa Hudgens.
Yeah.
You are not...
That much is clear.
You are not sealing the deal with her. Here's how you do it. You have to make your pecs dance up and down. And he does that for like 30 minutes. You just see his pecs dancing. And then he says, flick a berry at me. Come on. And the berries bounce off of him and at the viewer, because this movie was originally shown in 3D.
But he has to really push his stepson to flick one berry at him. And like finally caves in.
Yeah, and that's what's great. Like the screenwriters at this point, they're like, okay, we have this great joke. Let's work it. Let's work the audience a little bit. We got a berry flying at us, and then what happens, Dan?
Well, the great thing is he is so – like the stepson is so –
Let's just give him a name. I think his name is Alex.
Seth is his name.
Seth, okay.
He is
– Really?
He is so embarrassed by this whole pectoral dance. He does not want to flick a berry. And then
His name was Sean.
Sorry.
That's okay. We were both wrong.
Into the scene shuffles Louis Guzman, who's like – I'll flick berries at you. He could not be more excited. And he grabs a whole handful.
And just throws them. And Dwayne The Rock Johnson is like, yeah, go for it. Do it. Go.
They're bouncing all over the place. They're bouncing here, they're bouncing there. The last one bounces back into Louis Guzman's mouth.
It is the most weirdly subtextual homoerotic scene I've seen in a children's movie in a long time.
This is not counting later on when they both ride someplace on a giant bee, and Louis Guzman says, can I ride with you? And The Rock looks a little exasperated, but a little
excited. And then he grins.
The naked enthusiasm at this man-on-man relationship is almost, it's infectious.
I mean, Guzman really brings his A-game to this movie. He is all energy all the time, mm-hmm. constantly selling even lines like, when a lizard is about to eat them and he says, I hope it likes food that just pooped in its pants. Even that, he sells. He is a professional. Bravo to you. I mean, bravo to you, Mr. Guzman.
I think he at all times seems like a living teddy bear. And even none more so than
he's Gooby, basically, is what you're saying.
For about 15 minutes of the movie, he's riding on the back of that bee with giant bird shit all over him. And yet
he could not be happier.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so let's get to the bee part, huh? Mm-hmm. There's a giant volcano that spits gold. Let's not get into that.
Jerry Seinfeld.
There's a volcano that spits gold. A volcano that spits gold. Let's not get into that. They've got to get to the top of a mountain so they can get across the island to find the Nautilus, Captain Nemo's famous submarine, because that's the only way they're going to be able to escape from this island, this mysterious island, if you will.
I mean, if it sinks, why don't they just swim away?
Because they're in the middle of the Pacific Ocean.
Oh, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, hundreds of miles from Palau. So they would die.
Okay, no, you're right.
Okay, continue. Just wanted to make sure you knew that people can't.
Why don't they ride on one of those giant bees?
Even the bee probably wouldn't go that far.
Bees can only survive on the mysterious island.
And, okay, so they've got to get to the top of this mountain. How are they going to do it?
Topless?
They've got to get to the top of Topless Mountain.
Sounds great.
The thing is, the mountain has winds that whip around it that tear the shirts off people's backs.
They've
only sent expeditions of busty bikini-clad women
very
up this mountain.
Sexy expeditions.
Some might call it a great bikini off-road adventure, but not
these expeditions are intended to save some kind of a rec center or
and a dude ranch and a car wash. All in one. And I think it might be a school for special needs children, too. Anyway, so anywho, as I should say.
Sure, thanks.
They say, how are we going to get to the top of this mountain? We're going to fly up. And Michael Caine goes, I knew you were good for something, to Dwayne Johnson, because he's been ragging on Dwayne this whole movie.
Of course.
And suddenly Michael Caine is on top of a giant bee just flying around laughing like a madman, like a drunk Santa Claus at a mall, just like laughing his fool head off. Suddenly they're all riding giant bees, steering them somehow. I don't know.
You yank on the back of their bee heads.
I guess so.
You got one antenna in both hands, each hand, you know? You yank the left antenna to go left.
I don't think that's how bees work.
Does the other thing.
Listeners. Listeners, go to your backyard, catch a bee, start yanking on its antennas, and tell us what happens.
just tell us. Yeah, just do it.
Just tell us. Or videotape it, I guess.
So they're flying giant bees around, but what eats giant bees? Giant birds. Mm-hmm. So the birds chasing after them.
It's the giant birds and the bees.
You have your parents talk to you about it. Your giant parents talk to you about the giant birds and the giant bees. So they're flying around. They've got it's all this high-tech stunting where they've got to use evasive action to get away from these birds. The bees steer amazingly well. They handle like a dream. Mm-hmm. And at one point, to get these birds off their backs.
What do they have to do to put you in one of these giant bees?
Now, basically, imagine it's the speeder bike chase.
The pollen undercoating? They put that into the factory. We can't take that out.
Basically, just imagine the speeder bike chase from, what is that, Return of the Jedi?
Yeah.
But instead of speeder bikes, swap in bees.
And birds.
and birds instead of stormtroopers, duh.
It was just like that hit movie, Bag That Bird, a.k.a. Catch That Kid. Because mm-hmm. let me tell you, the birds wanted to catch that kid, and the kid wanted to bag that bird. And mm-hmm. by bag, I mean escape from. Mm-hmm. So they were chasing each other, flying around, and my favorite part of it is that Michael Caine and Dwayne Johnson have a plan. They're going to play chicken, zooming towards each other, and then steer out of the last minute and let the birds chasing them hit their heads. Yeah. And they're flying at each other going, ah, and then the bees put on a sudden burst of speed and then get out of the way, and the birds hit each other, and it's like, so what? Did they just turn on the nitro boosters on those bees? Like, did the bees fart and go much faster? Like, how did that happen?
The two birds explode in a cascade of feathers.
They don't, like, explode with flames.
Yeah, like, but, like, there's all these feathers going, and, like, and the bee, like, zooms out of that with Michael Caine on the back, and I think that was when my wife walked into the room saying, what is going on?
This is, let me tell you, I'm sure we've all had the
kind of... What was going on was three grown men sitting on couches giving each other high fives.
And the image of an overjoyed Michael Caine laughing like crazy at the back of a bee as he flew through a cloud of feathers. I tell you, sometimes movies are magical. That's why you ask why the Lumiere brothers invented the movie camera. It is for that. So Méliès wishes he had created this scene, let me tell you. So anyway, they long story short, they get split up. Luis Guzman runs off on his own to look for gold because he wants to be able to send his daughter to college. Well, Dwayne and Sean are going to get the Nautilus, and they got to swim underwater. There's a giant electric eel. They use that to repower the Nautilus. Uh-oh, the island is crumbling and collapsing. Are they going to be able to get to the other heroes
probably
in time?
Not.
Probably not. They do.
Okay.
And
oh, thank God.
And they all escape, and that's pretty much it. Guzman keeps the Nautilus and becomes a rich tour guide leader.
Mm-hmm. And does our young hero, does he get to keep his girlfriend? Or
Vanessa Hudgens is now his girlfriend.
Caribbean, I guess,
yeah, she's moved all the way to the U.S.
to go to college and be with him. And on his birthday, I guess, he gets a letter in the mail from, where is it from? Cameroon? Mm-hmm. And he's like, a letter from Cameroon? Who could this be? Oh, it's my grandpa. It's like, yeah, fuck, of course it's your grandpa. Like, he's your weird world explorer grandpa. Who else do you know is going to be Cameroon? Anyway, so, and then suddenly...
Maybe it's a letter from, like, a Cameroon prince asking for...
for his bank info?
Yeah.
Then, third best moment in the movie after Barry's flicked at Dwayne Johnson's pecs and riding a giant bee through a cloud of feathers. Third best moment, Michael Caine walks in, dude it up like a leather bike rider.
Yeah. Imagine Rob Halford in, like... 40 years.
No, but also, like...
But, like, in better shape than Rob Halford's
in. But the third, like, homoerotic moment in the movie, too, because it was not, like, a leather bike... I mean, he was, like, a leather daddy. Like, he was, like, an elderly leather daddy.
I think
you're projecting. He was wearing a helmet. I mean,
it's not like he had a little cap on.
Yeah.
And a fucking... Like a little fucking strap to slap
people. He wasn't wearing like chaps.
Riding crop or something.
It wasn't like we'd walked into that stereotypical gay bar in the Police Academy movies. Is what you're saying?
No, not really.
That was
no,
a gay bar.
Terrible. It was a terrible.
I just thought that was a mustache club.
80s homophobia. Mustache.
I think that was that was a scene that was originally meant for Cruising, but it somehow got into the script for Police Academy. Oh, but anyway, so he says, I'll go to blah, 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 in his voice. Dan, you do better. But he's like, oh, are you ready for another adventure? Because guess where we're going? And he holds up Jules Verne's From the Earth to the Moon. That's right. They're going to go to the moon.
He said, we're going to the motherfucking moon.
That's why he said it, but without the swearing.
And then like a hot guitar lick.
Yeah.
Kristen Stewart does a... Wait, is that her name? What's her name?
Kristen Davis. Yeah, from Sex and the City, plays Sean's mom.
So she then does like a spit take or something? Or?
She's like, no way. And Dwayne Johnson goes, come on. It's just the moon. Camera zooms back out of the house, zooms back out of the continent, zooms back out of the planet, whips around the moon. We see the moon is there.
Yep.
Which is that supposed
reveal.
To be a reveal? Moon's the existence of the moon is confirmed. And that's the end of the movie. And so I guess Journey 3, The Moon, is going to be the sequel. They have greenlit a sequel where I assume they go to the... Yeah, where they... I assume they'll either go to the moon or maybe they'll just... go around the world in 80 days, which seems like kind of a letdown.
Yeah, I mean, you could do that super easy. Just get on a plane.
Yeah, but they're going to go to the... Well, here's the thing.
Like, well, like, I feel like they can modernize Journey to the Center of the Earth. They can modernize the Mysterious Island. If they modernize From the Earth to the Moon, they're just going to go to the moon and be like, there was a bunch of gray dust up there.
Yeah, not bug aliens that they can frolic with.
It should be oversized animals, though, right?
If they go to the moon and it turns out on the moon,
that's great.
Animals that are normally big on Earth are bigger, and animals that are normally small on Earth are smaller.
Wow.
Okay.
So, like, turtles are the size of beetles, and elephants are the size of skyscrapers.
Okay.
I mean, that still sounds pretty great, I got to say.
Yeah. Also, for some reason, sex is better on the moon. Oh. I don't know if they're going to talk about that.
It's going to be a weird.
Let's go.
But it's a waitlist thing. And
wait
also,
list?
Yeah. Yeah, it's a waitlist thing. It's very hard to get into the moon. You may
because
have a lot
the
of
sex is better. You,
there's a waitlist to have sex on the moon.
You may have a lot
I'm
of extra.
Sorry, sir.
You may have a lot of extracurriculars. You may be a legacy. You're still going to get waitlisted because a lot of people want to have that moon sex. Look, maybe you got straight A's. Straight A's. You could be the valedictorian. It's a lot of competition. You know, you're better off going to a safety moon for safety sex. Just better chances. Guess, just play the numbers.
So wait,
so is this like
sex?
A weird like college like, sex comedy? Or
yeah, on the moon.
Now are you?
Like, it's called Moon U. Get it? Because it's like they're mooning you, but also Moon University.
When you're having this moon sex, are you in some sort of like dual like spacesuit that covers both of you at the same time? Or is
you're on
there
a moon,
like a
you're on
like,
a moon base.
Is there?
You can't have sex on the surface of the moon. Actually, you can. They're called fun suits, but you know that's.
And I would like imagine.
Little,
I would imagine
little,
the,
there's a little flap. I imagine.
Yeah, it's called Moon U, and the tagline is "In space, no one can hear you come."
Okay.
And the lack of air kind of intensifies the orgasm.
Oh yeah,
right?
I mean it's like, it means you don't have to strangle yourself. Yeah.
It's auto moon erotic asphyxiation.
Yeah. So that was gross.
Okay.
But in the book, I'm kind of curious to see how they would do it, because in the book, From the Earth to the Moon, they put a giant bullet shell inside of an enormous gun and fired at the moon. And I hate to break it to you guys, that's not a feasible way in these modern times of getting to the moon. So,
no.
How do they get
I mean,
back
like,
again?
They just kind of get back in and fall.
Okay.
I don't remember if they set off an explosion on the moon. I think the bullet just kind of falls back to Earth.
No, that sounds pretty good. That works.
Yeah.
That's science. So we watched this long movie. Now it wasn't
that long.
It was originally
not long. It was an hour and 34 minutes.
It was originally presented in all three dimensions. Do you feel we lost anything watching it in only two?
Well, I hate to be a pedant, but
sure.
We did watch it in three dimensions with height and time.
Okay.
Just because we didn't have the dimension of death does not mean it was not a three-dimensional movie. If anything, it should have been Journey to the Mysterious Island 4D.
Okay. Well, pardon me for a second while I drown Elliot in his tub.
In what?
He's got a claw for the bathtub over there just
oh, okay.
for drowning
yeah.
people.
Yeah.
At least it's a classy bathtub to be drowned in. But yeah, this was originally a 3D movie. What we missed out on was a helicopter flying at our face, berries bouncing off of the rock's chest, bouncing in our face.
Into your face.
A lizard jumping in our face. Birds and bees flying in our face. That kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm. A zoom in on the moon, perhaps?
Yeah, although I don't know how that would work so well exactly in 3D, because it's not like...
Like the moon is flying at your face is what would happen. That's how it would work.
I also imagine that a lot of the 3D was devoted to Vanessa Hudgens' cleavage.
I don't think so.
It's a big part of this movie.
I don't think, really, that it's a big part of the movie.
It is
what about
a big
the...
part of this movie.
If anything, it's the fact that she wears her shorts really low.
No, yeah, no, you kept pointing out those weird lines. What do
no,
they call those?
No, you
those
kept
lines
pointing
on
out those lines.
You had a horrific, disgusting name for those lines.
No, but
I just called them pelvic lines.
I think it is a valid observation to say that, like, this is a modern family film. And one thing that you don't normally get in a modern family film is
Wait,
someone
it's
wearing
the movie version of the TV show Modern Family. That sounds fucking great.
It's
amazing.
A family
finally
film.
A story that big enough for the for whatever that family is that I can't remember their name.
It's a family film made in our prudish age that has like a
yeah
woman.
Our prudish vivid video advertising on billboards
but that's a
in
separate,
the in public
that's a separate
age.
Thing. Like I feel like either things are pornography or they're scrubbed.
No, you're right because for instance, when they do remakes of older movies now, they clean them up.
Yeah,
like the remake
of all the sex.
The
things.
Remake of Fame, they cleaned it up considerably. The remake of Straw Dogs, which is not a kid's movie, but they
right.
still cleaned it up considerably.
There, and this is like a straight-ahead family film, and Vanessa Hudgens is wearing a noticeably like low-cut top and tiny shorts through the entire thing. And I feel like the camera lingers on that.
Well, it's innocent sexy. It's like a Frank Tashlin film.
Yeah, sure.
And I think the ladies get some too, dude. Dwayne mm-hmm. The Rock Johnson is fucking
doing his
he flexes
dance.
Pecs a lot.
And
that's
Luis Guzman, you got both worlds. You got the hunky
and the cuddly
hero,
teddy bear.
And you got the cuddly teddy bear genius.
I don't think he was a genius. He was kind of a stupid
he was not a genius.
No, he thought gold would be worth a lot of money, and then
that's
rich
not,
at the end of the movie.
That's
man.
Not genius. That's something everyone knows.
Yeah, and he doesn't even get the gold. He's rich because of the Nautilus tours.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Nautilus that he didn't find, right?
Not,
just,
well, no, I don't know why he
mouth.
Got to keep it. Because
he was so good at driving it.
But he almost killed them.
It's like, you know, a submarine chooses its owner.
Is that how it is?
Yeah, it's like Black Stallion.
Like a magic sword?
Exactly.
So the Nautilus is like the sword in the stone.
Exactly.
One thing I'll mention that's not really related to the movie is that during the watching of this film.
What?
During the watching, I came up with a term to describe Ewoks that I liked, which was teddy bear cavemen.
You did come up with that. Yeah. So, listeners, write that down.
Teddy bear cavemen.
20 years when people are always using that phrase.
You'll know I invented it. And I'll get a shiny nickel every time.
Yeah, I don't know if there's...
So, this was a pretty colorful, cartoony movie that moved really fast, I gotta say. Until the end. The ending, it got kind of boring.
Yeah, well, there's a little soul-searching at the end.
Which it didn't need. Considering this is a movie where they just ride around on giant bees, you didn't need soul-searching.
Although soul-searching did lead to the other thing that I never expected to see in a movie, which was Dwayne The Rock Johnson playing the ukulele and singing a song about flying around on giant bees.
That's, maybe we forgot to mention this part, is that Sean, the kid, hurts his leg, and in order to take his mind off the pain, Michael Caine has Michael Caine says that music is nature's painkiller, which is not true.
Mm-hmm.
And he has Dwayne Johnson.
Painkillers are nature's painkillers.
They have a ukulele because Luis Guzman plays the ukulele. And Dwayne Johnson plays the ukulele and sings, I guess, a parody version of What a Wonderful World with lyrics tailored to the adventures they've had up to that point.
Sure. It's probably on the CD soundtrack, right?
Oh, I have to assume. Yeah, from Elektra Records.
Find it on iTunes. It's on Relapse Records. So there's also a scene where Luis Guzman, while standing on a giant lizard egg, falls inside and then has a moment where he yells at a baby
An unborn
fetus.
Baby lizard, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, Luis Guzman is delightful. He's just really – he's likable through almost the whole movie.
Probably
even when he's being
character.
Stupid.
He's
by far the
treasure.
Best character. He is an American treasure.
I think I could have watched more of a movie of Dwayne Johnson and Luis Guzman getting in adventures.
The two of them,
mismatched buddies.
I have to say, like, I've never been a huge fan of Dwayne Johnson, but he has an undeniable charisma. And in this, he's like a really fun guy to watch in a movie. And he manages to carve out this character who is not a big, strong, dumb guy. And he's not like a know-it-all. He's like a very competent adult. Who is a big strong guy, but he never uses his strength in the entire movie. Pretty much, like you could have Dustin Hoffman play the same role basically, and you wouldn't have to tailor it too much, except for the pec scene would obviously get cut or made longer. But Dwayne Johnson is just very likable and plays a character who is very likable, and it helps cover up the fact that the kid Sean is a total cipher and not interesting at all. But like. If the sequel was just Luis Guzman and Dwayne Johnson just having an adventure, like, that'd be awesome. Like, that'd be a great TV series.
Yeah, go to the moon.
You call it
I'll follow.
Here's the TV show.
Just lead.
Here's the TV show. We call it Adventure Buddies.
Okay.
It's Luis Guzman, Dwayne Johnson. They have adventures. Sometimes they don't have adventures. Maybe their adventure is just going to the supermarket. It's an everyday adventure. Maybe they got to return a library book before the library closes.
And that's based on Everyday Adventures by Jules Verne, right?
Yeah, it was during Jules Verne's very Seinfeld-inspired phase. When he just wanted to write about everyday things, yeah. There's that episode where there's that volume where Captain Nemo has to wait for a table in a Chinese restaurant.
It's terrible.
Very funny though.
It would really weigh on his status as a Sikh Hindu guy or whatever.
He's a prince.
A prince?
Sikh
prince?
Hindu guy. Two different religions.
He is a prince.
No, it's basically the same thing, right?
Well, they go with the Indian version of Nemo and not the Polish version of Nemo. There's two different versions of Captain Nemo.
What?
That's
what?
Right. There are two different Nemos. You might even say there's Nemo than you expected.
No, I wouldn't say that. Especially because it barely makes sense.
Hey, mo Nemos, mo problems. That's what I'm
when
saying.
When you're standing around the water cooler, you could say that all the time.
when the character Captain Nemo comes up around the water cooler, I'll be sure to make
you go,
that joke.
Hey, Nemo problems. Nemo money, Nemo problems. It'll be like, oh, I'm so tired of that. Hey, I found Nemo. Found him, everybody. I found Nemo.
Every time 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea comes up, makes the same joke.
Well, that's reminds me of the great Saturday Night Live sketch where everyone's misinterpreting the phrase 20,000 leagues under the sea.
20,000 leagues under
sea. So we're 20,000 leagues under the sea. No, we are traveling 20,000 leagues while we're under the sea. What a funny sketch based on a very small misunderstanding.
Tiny misunderstanding about the way.
About the title of a 19th century book.
About depth versus length.
So anyway, Journey to the Center of the Invisible World.
We should move on to our final judgments on this. Was this a good, bad movie, a bad, bad movie, a movie you kind of liked? Elliot, go.
You know what? I have to be honest with myself. I have to say a movie I kind of liked. It was really goofy and cartoony and stupid and not like a really good movie. But on the other hand, I enjoyed almost all of it. It showed me things I never thought I'd see in a movie, such as Michael Caine riding a giant bee and Dwayne Johnson picking up a tiny elephant and then just putting it back down again. And even the part with the dancing pecs, which I did not like when I saw the trailer for this movie, in the movie knows that this is a stupid, crazy thing it's doing. So, yeah, I kind of enjoyed it.
Yeah, there's so much delight from Louis Guzman. He could not be happier.
This is one of the few movies we've watched.
It's his naked enthusiasm.
This is
like the innocence of a child.
One of the few movies we've watched from Flophouse where I feel like the people involved in it at some point must have felt good about themselves, whereas most of the movies we see, the people involved seem to hate themselves in some way.
Some sort of deep shame.
But what about you, Dan or Stuart?
I would say that I actually also like this movie. I mean, it was short, but that doesn't mean, like, you know, a lot of movies that we watch, we think, okay, this is 90 minutes long. It'll go by like a breeze, and then it just seems like a slog. I
mean, Passion Play was 90 minutes long, and it felt like it was 100 hours.
This movie moved along very quickly with its plot developments, and there was always something sort of interesting going on, and if there wasn't, something new would come along next. And I like seeing a movie with big monsters running around. I like seeing a movie with cleavage running around. I like seeing a movie.
She's like 14, Dan.
She's not 14.
Maybe 11.
She's like 23 in this movie at least.
Well, she hasn't gone to college yet?
Well, her father can't afford it.
Oh, this is
she wants to go to the Palau State, but home of the fighting Palauans.
This woman is a movie teenager, which means that she's in her mid-20s.
Yeah, that's true, or in her 40s.
But yeah, I thought this movie was actually kind of fun, and I enjoyed it. Stuart?
Yeah, I mean, I agree. Everything you've said, I agree with. Louis Guzman, amazing. Vanessa Hudgens, yeah, sure, she's got dimples. around every corner, there's new vistas to explore.
I will say, a lot of the effects are really obvious, kind of cheesy CGI, which works here because you're not supposed to take it too seriously.
So watch it in super HD.
Stuart kept saying throughout the movie, where did they shoot this? It's beautiful.
I want to visit this place.
Where do they find this field of giant lizard eggs to fall on?
Yeah.
It's gorgeous.
If you build it, they will come. That was the lesson of Field of Giant Lizard Eggs, starring Kevin Costner.
So
I was just changing his name up
to an egg name.
To an egg name, yeah, Kevin Ostrich.
Before we get into letters, okay. I got a few pieces of business.
Part of the show, but not yet.
Sweep up.
Part of the show. Wait a minute. Dan's got something that he's got to do. I don't know what it is. So let's hear what it is in a minute.
Go ahead,
but first,
so,
let's do
I'd like to first thank Dimitri T., Jessup W.,
yeah!
And Robert.
Oh, man.
Dan, hold on a second. The house cat is here.
Okay. Hello, house cat.
Oh, he left. He walked out. He's back again.
I'd like to thank Dimitri T., Jessup W., and especially Robert D. for their generous donations.
Thank you very much, all of you.
One and all.
Thanks for helping us make this world go round just a few minutes more, whatever that means.
I've realized that it's been a long time since we've actually...
Getting from there to here.
All right, stop singing your Star Trek themes. It's been a long time.
Sorry.
Since we've actually mentioned a few things on the show, one of which is the website address.
Okay, we have a website.
www.flophousepodcast.com, where you can go and see show notes and see plugs for other things that we're doing, and get a link to the Facebook page where we have a rich and engaged community.
The floppies on the Facebook are always ready to discuss anything. They're a bunch of great folks, and they make crazy jokes up, and I love talking to them, so you should too.
And you can also find a link to the Flophouse wiki which is
if you ever want to stir up a really intense conversation about DuckTales, Nicolas Cage,
the Sight and Sound Top 10 list, or what Dan is, just go to the Flophouse Facebook page.
You just really want to insult me in a way that seems funny at the time, but just chips away at my self esteem.
The Flophouse Facebook page is a safe place to do that.
Yeah.
And the Flophouse Wiki is, as always, wonderful. Well worth spending a couple hours or a couple hundred hours exploring.
Yeah, especially if you're new.
Like 10 million hours.
It'll clue you in on some old in-jokes.
Either that or it will confuse you further about those in-jokes. But for the very least, you'll find the plot for my screenplay pitch, Million Dollar Getaway, which I'm still willing to sell to Hollywood for $700,000.
And I also wanted to mention the Flophouse email, the longest email in podcasting, which is theflophousepodcast@gmail.com.
Theflophousepodcast@gmail.com.
Dashes or spaces?
No,
or
terrible, terrible email address. Word. One very long word. Are we plugging stuff now, or should we wait later till
we
after the letters?
Till later, wait. But,
okay, after the letters, we'll do some plugs.
So
people have probably turned off their podcast machines already.
Mm-hmm. They're called iPhones. But we'll move on to letters. This first one is from Stefan, last name withheld,
I assume the last name withheld. Is Urkel.
Possibly.
It's a letter from Stefan Urkel, the cool version of Steve Urkel that he gets when he drinks a potion or gets into a machine or some shit. I don't know.
Yeah.
So wait, it's cooler than Steve Urkel, but that guy's really smart and gets really good grades, Elliot. Shouldn't he be cool?
Well, let me explain some things to you, Stuart, after the podcast.
This is an apt email for tonight's movie. It's titled 3D
or not 3D. Why don't you guys watch Journey 2, The Mysterious Island? Well, we did, Stefan. Thanks.
Why don't you go fuck yourself?
Whoa. You are putting words in my mouth that I thought but did not say.
So this is titled 3D or not 3D.
It's 3D, of course.
To the esteemed representatives of the House of Flop.
Thank you.
I've been a longtime fan of the podcast, and I've gone through the entire archive several times. You never fail to entertain with your fantastic movie pitches, growing list of original Batman villains, discussion on the intricacies of DuckTales, and, of course, words that sound like other words.
That's what we do.
Recently, I was helping my parents pick out a new TV. Like all other mundane tasks, this reminded me of the Flophouse. My father, who unironically loves bad movies and is unaware of their crapitudinity, wanted a new television with 3D displaying possibilities. As the original peaches may have noticed, many recent flops have been released in 3D.
Much like tonight's.
To help the failing movie industry get more butts in theater seats, most people seem to prefer watching movies in the comfort of their own home to sitting in an overpriced movie theater.
I would say it's really more to squeeze extra dollars out of ticket sales.
It's basically the same thing, though.
Nope.
Have you floppers considered upgrading your movie-watching setup?
Why don't they do some kind of a deal where when you buy a ticket, you get a free bag of popcorn?
Well, popcorn is where the movie theaters make their profit.
Very
so that's
innovative.
So what if you buy a bag of popcorn and you get to see a movie for free?
Again, then the studio doesn't make any money.
Okay. Anyway, we'll hash this out.
Those are both unfeasible.
Have you floppers considered upgrading your movie watching setup to be able to watch your beloved bad movies in shitty post-conversion 3D, the way marketing executives intended them to be seen? I'm thinking specifically of movies like Drive Angry 3D, rated R, or the inevitable and justified Flophouse entry Ghost Rider Spirit of Vengeance. So basically anything with 3D with Nicolas Cage and his vast array of wigs.
Oh, so this movie, this letter was written before we watched Ghost Rider Spirit of Vengeance. A blast from the flop past.
If so,
it's like the past is talking to the future.
It's like that episode of the Saved by the Bell where they unearth that
the Saved by the Bell.
Someday I'll make it through an entire
I remember
letter.
That time capsule episode from the old, and they bury their own at the end, right?
Yeah, and they're the only ones who get to contribute. I feel so bad about for all the other students who contribute.
The subtext of Saved by the Bell is it's just like the Twilight Zone episode, It's a Good Life. Zach, Kelly, Screech, Slater, and Jesse, our heroes, and Lisa, have mind powers that allow them to change reality. They cut Bayside off from the rest of the universe a long time ago, and they run that place. That's how they can go into Mr. Belding's office whenever they want.
Sure. And can't Zach Morris stop time? And
okay, well, things will make more sense
exactly.
if you don't interrupt in the
and a
middle
homeless
of letters,
man in his house.
But instead, wait until after the letter.
So read it.
Meaningless digression. No, I can't when you're talking over me. If so, what would it take for you to make the switch to 3D, and would it involve an eccentric millionaire, and how would boxing alligators figure into the equation?
Ooh, good question. Very good question.
And that's from Stefan, last name withheld.
Well, if we found an eccentric millionaire who boxed alligators, a la The Happiest Millionaire, then I think maybe Dan would take a 3D TV. But Dan, you actually have some TV news.
He just got a new TV.
I did upgrade the television. I avoided a 3D television.
And why? Purpose. What was your thinking was behind that?
Because they're terrible and they make everything look awful.
But why else?
Well, but on top of that,
elaborate.
In the process of buying a new television, like, it's no secret to longtime listeners that I live in a Brooklyn apartment, and Brooklyn apartments are not huge.
Spacious.
Speak for yourself. I live in a palace.
You do live in a palace, but
a golden palace with the three surviving golden girls.
You've been a television writer longer than I have.
There's only one surviving golden girl. But, oh, my God, I've got two golden girl corpses in my apartment.
But I found in the course of shopping for a new television that you no longer can get a reasonable sized TV.
They only make the big ones.
They only make big ones. They either make like small ones that you're supposed to put in your kitchen because apparently you have to watch television while you're in your kitchen now.
I grew up in a house with a TV and a kitchen. Right. Okay, so we're not crazy. We're not hill people. All right, we're not monsters just because we have a TV in the kitchen.
Yeah, it's not like you're watching the TV and like burning your hands on hot French fry grease.
Why would you need that?
Look, if the other TV is in my parents' room and my sister has friends over and they're in the basement, where am I going to watch USA Up All Night but on the kitchen TV?
But the point is, like,
I rest my case.
You can't get a television that fits in a reasonable apartment size anymore. You have to get like a 50-inch fucking.
Well, they want you to mount it on your wall.
Yeah, and I feel
50
like
inches would actually be very small for a whale. But continue.
But that's where like you get into all these crazy accoutrements, which I don't want in the first place.
Yeah, so we're left with two options. Either this giant TV, and we have to sit in somebody else's apartment and watch it through the window, or this teeny little TV, and Elliot has to sit on my lap, and Dan has to kind of snuggle in
there. I don't understand why we're squeezing together when the TV is so small there's more room in the room.
We need to get closer to it.
I don't understand either, but Stuart says it's the only way, so...
All right, well, let me get on your lap.
So today we watch Journey 2 in somebody else's apartment while your wife, Sarah, held a cell phone up to the speaker and we could listen to it.
It worked great.
It was kind of in three dimensions.
I would say I still am having, and maybe it's because I'm an old-time fuss budget and a curmudgeon, but I have trouble believing that 3D television really is the way of the future because the things that are on television are not shot so as to look good in 3D. And I don't mean just like they're not taking
Anna Paquin's face
they're
in not True Blood.
I don't mean they're not taking advantage of the depth of field. I mean like you don't get a lot of shows that have full figure people walking around and like are you going to want to see a big 3D close up of like Drew Carey's face or like, you know, the characters on True Blood or whatever? No, of course not. Even sports is not going to look good in 3D, you know. I think 3D TVs is a fad unless they somehow change the way television is shot and presented.
And the first thing I imagine when they present these 3D TVs where guys have to wear – like you have to wear like a set of glasses to watch it.
Yeah.
These guys getting up to go to the bathroom and like bumping their legs on their coffee table and
– or bumping their legs on the TV people that are now three dimensions.
Yeah, exactly.
I also, just me myself, not a huge fan of 3D movies. I find it makes my head hurt and it makes it harder for me to take in the whole screen as one composed image.
So no thank you, Beowulf 3D.
Yeah.
That was one of the better ones.
So this next one is recommendation from Paul, last name withheld.
Paul Lind.
I admit I'm going to read it mostly for the postscripts, so sure. keep tuned in.
Okay.
I wanted to send you a quick recommendation. I recently watched Gareth Edwards' little scene 2010 film Monsters, which, while not perfect, is an interesting contrast to films like Cloverfield or, insert Dan-style sigh, Godzilla. It's contemplative and thoughtful, while those are frenetic. Apologies if you've already seen it, but I thought I'd suggest it just in case. P.S. Dan, I thought you'd like to know that my wife, when hearing the podcast, said that the sad-sounding fellow who steered the conversation was her favorite. P.P.S. Okay, that's a lie. What she actually said was, huh, and hasn't listened to another episode.
It sounds like Elliot's wife.
P.P.P.S.
Yeah, except for the listening to the episode part.
P.P.P.S. But to head off Dan's inevitable question, yes, my wife has a nice ass. Paul, last name withheld.
Paul, it's so amazing how well you predicted Dan's mind at that point.
Thank you for your ass news.
I have as usual, that should be sent to theflophouseasscast@gmail.com, but understandable, since Dan does talk about wives' asses on this show.
I did it once. I did it one time.
While we were watching the movie, he talked about that ass.
Vanessa Hudgens's.
No, the other one, Kristen.
Michael Caine's?
Kristen
that
Davis.
That was Elliot! You're now attributing things that Elliot said.
You
to
agreed
me.
With what I said,
just
though.
Just because. Yeah, you but
said,
I thought in my brain.
I said, and
Elliot
I quote.
Said it like 2 seconds before
I,
you were
I said,
say
and I quote, Kristen Davis has a nice caboose. And you said, I was just thinking the same thing. Although I don't know if you were thinking the word caboose.
Yeah, I wasn't as charmingly old timey about it. But Monsters is an interesting movie.
So, on the subject of wife asses, Monsters is a good movie. Thanks.
So this is from Flophouse superfan Remy, last name withheld.
Hi, Remy.
She says, the universe cries in agony because of this unexplored avenue of comedy.
Uh-oh.
When I heard you mention that the house cat is practicing for a Shakespeare play, I was expecting a patented Flophouse tangent.
I think you forgot that we forget things as soon as we say them.
The entirety of creation was sorely disappointed when no such tangent materialized. God damn it, guys. Now all of creation is in a state of chaos. I demand you rectify this. The scales of time cannot be off balance for more than 2 months. Otherwise, the gates of eternity will collapse.
Very true.
P.S. Hey, Stuart, what did you think of The Dark Knight Rises? Does it compare well to Castle Freak? When you think about it, Batman lives in a mansion, which is kind of a castle.
Yeah.
Also, Batman's kind of a freak because he's a weirdo who dresses up like a bat. Is he a better castle freak than the original?
I think the answer to the question then is, does Batman rip his own ding-dong off?
The answer is yes, just like in the original movie, Castle Freak. Directed by Stuart Gordon, starring one Jeffrey Combs. Would Batman be a better castle freak than me? Yes. Would he be a better castle freak than the actual freak? No, of course. I'm sorry, Remy. But nice try. You didn't put that one over on me.
But this Shakespeare play,
I forgot that the house cat was
like a King Lear type figure.
Cat Lear, it's called. He divides up the litter box between his three kittens, thinking they'll love him more. But in fact, two of them, Catterall and Recat, love him less. And of course, Cat Delia always loved him, but wouldn't make a big show of it. And there's all the others. There's the subplots with the two twin brothers, Catword and Catmond, and, of course, Puster, their father.
Okay, so everybody, you're welcome. I just gave you a chance to see how much stuff Elliot knows about Shakespeare.
Well, King Lear I know quite a bit about, but some of the other ones. Don't ask me to do any Timon of Athens stuff. Oh, no.
No Coriolanus riffs from you.
Except
that's
that
setup.
Timon of Athens is the only Shakespeare play to star a meerkat.
To Meown of Athens.
To Meown of Athens.
Okay, good stuff. Moving on.
Ran out of gas on that one. Should have stopped it at Cat Lear. Woo!
This letter is from John, last name withheld.
Hey, John.
Hi, John. Thanks for writing in.
It's a letter titled, Elliot Doesn't Know What a Zeppeli Is. And it goes on to say, what kind of New York podcast is this? P.S. Write a pilot for Theseus and Stelios TV series, and I'll be forgiven.
Okay, I'll work on that pilot. As for Zeppelis, that was a food thing, right?
Yeah.
I don't give a rat's
like fried,
everything.
It's Italian fried dough and...
Yeah, but you ever been to a street fair in New York?
I avoid them because that's not where I want to buy my underwear, socks, or funnel cakes.
But they have the softest socks. The sign says that the socks are the softest.
Look,
softest.
It's rare that I'm in the market for mismatched socks, bras with holes in them, or gyros. So, you know.
How about watercolor paintings of the New York skyline?
Nope, don't want that either.
All right.
Or t-shirts for local bands.
Okay.
So, yeah,
I'm
not a fan of, I don't know anything about Zeppelis. Of course, Zeppeli Marx, I'm familiar with, the least funny of the Marx brothers.
Sure. But the most fried. And this
delicious.
This last Flophouse letter comes from Dan, last name disclosed, Berube, or Berube. And it's titled...
Yeah, way to disclose that name, Dan. McCoy. I'm making fun of Dan McCoy here, not
you,
Dan.
He doesn't have a phonetic...
Dan Berube or Beruba.
If he really wanted to disclose his last name, he would have had a phonetic spelling. But
as someone whose his last name is mispronounced all the time, I sympathize with him.
And thank you for writing.
And thank you for writing and listening.
His letter is titled Vindication. Dear the Flophouse, as the guy who wrote that Ding Dong Gate letter almost a year ago,
God.
I would like to thank Dan McCoy for having the courage to support my campaign for the truth.
Courage? Isn't that Rosa Parks?
There is no Ding Dong ripping in Castle Freak. Mr. Wellington, the American and Canadian people have spoken. Dan, you are truly the Bernstein to my Woodward, and for that I thank you. Stuart, that makes you Richard Nixon, and Elliot, I guess you're Ben Stein.
Okay.
So I look forward to your hilarious game show and misguided climate change documentary.
Hey, well, my life goal is really the Clear Eyes commercials.
Yeah.
And I've always dreamed of putting turning on a shower head over a beach ball, just like Ben Stein.
If the end result of me telling you that a dude rips his own dick off in a movie got you to watch Castle Freak, then I've done a service to both you, Dan, who I'm sure was sitting here at 2 in the afternoon, furiously writing down the time on his DVD player for when that scene actually happened, so he could prove to me that it didn't happen. I did you all a service, and you know what? That makes me pretty great.
Okay.
I'm not quite sure why I was Ben Stein in that scenario. At the very least, I should be like Spiro Agnew or Gerald Ford.
How about a McNamara?
A McNamara? Just one of them?
Just
one of the many McNamaras littering the floor? Just lying around? Pick up any McNamara. Doesn't matter. You be that one.
So we all got a little bit of burned in that letter segment.
Yeah, we did. Those letters
that was
took
a rough one.
No prisoners.
There's
I
a
got
distinct
for
lack of respect among the fans.
Something tells me we have engendered this among the fans.
You know, they're always keeping us on our toes, guys.
Yeah.
Can't be slouches.
It isn't always
Although we
letters
were this episode. Let's go.
It isn't always letters written by Dan about how great Dan is.
So this final segment of the show is where we recommend movies that we usually have seen recently, not necessarily, but movies that we like in contrast to the usual dross we watch, although we all kind of enjoy Journey 2.
Ooh, dross. Ooh, well. Look at Alfred Lord Tennyson over here.
Stuart, is there a movie you would like to recommend?
I do. This afternoon, before I drank a bunch of beers,
okay.
I sat in my living room and watched The Raid. Redemption.
I want to see that.
That was for American release, which is, I guess, Indonesian? I don't know. No matter. It's a great movie about a bunch of SWAT team dudes who go into this tenement building and then have to beat all these dudes up. If you like
Sounds
dudes
great.
Beating each other up and like grunting a lot and shouting.
Those are things I like.
And for a movie that features a fair amount of CGI blood. You guys all know I'm an outspoken
That's
opponent.
Usually a deal breaker for you.
In this case,
even when Zatoichi himself is spraying that CGI blood.
In this case, it didn't bother me as much. I guess it might have been the grunting or the shadows. So run, don't walk to my living room and watch The Raid, Redemption.
In your living room?
That's where it's playing right now?
That's where I want to watch it again, so you should come over and watch it with me. Thanks.
Love, Stuart.
A little bit ago, I rewatched. I was home at night. The wife was out.
Yeah, paint us a word picture of your life. Just get to the movie, would you?
I wanted to watch something fun.
Okay.
I wanted to watch something fun and light, and I rewatched.
So the sorrow and the pity.
Yep. Sallow. I rewatched Galaxy Quest, which I don't think I'd seen
that's a very fun movie.
In full since I saw it. In the theater when it came out. I'd seen bits and pieces, obviously, on television because I feel like it's always on television. But I really enjoyed it. And watching it again, it sort of struck me that it wasn't necessarily that it's the most hilarious comedy. Like, I didn't find myself laughing out loud a lot at what was happening in it.
LOLing, the kids call it.
Yeah. I mean, other than I actually thought that Tony Shalhoub's line readings as, like, the weird, totally sort of spaced out, possibly stoned actor were really funny. But in general, it wasn't necessarily that it was a comedy where the jokes were so hilarious, but it was so well constructed.
I thought that was that's Tony Shalhoub's character?
Yeah.
I thought that was Sam Rockwell's character.
Sam Rockwell is the nervous guy who thinks he's going to get killed.
Oh, okay. I got it mixed up.
But and he's very funny in it, too. But by and large, what I found most enjoyable about it was just a super well-constructed movie where everything pays off really nicely, and you feel really good about all of the character arts. It's just a movie that makes you feel good about what happens in it.
Like Prometheus.
Yeah, exactly like Prometheus.
And speaking of Galaxy Quest, that Tim Allen guy, you know, he's a rising star.
He's a great cocaine
one of these days seller. he's gonna get his hit.
He's had many.
Okay, so Elliot.
I'm surprised you didn't mention Sigourney Weaver's cleavage. That's your thing.
It's not. That's my thing. It's my thing.
Dan alone, of all men.
Of all men, I enjoy cleavage.
You heard it here first.
I don't get the big deal.
Out of his own mouth. Yeah, it's, you know, whatever.
It's like a chest butt.
Well said, Stuart. You're the poet of modern age.
He's the poet laureate of filth. I am going to risk cliche about my being a Brooklyn indie movie watcher, and I'm going to recommend a movie I saw this weekend that I liked a lot called Beasts of the Southern Wild, which you've probably heard of because it's
Oprah
one of,
liked it.
Oprah liked it. It's one of those indie movies that gets a huge marketing campaign and everybody's talking about it as if they assume nobody else has heard of it because it's a small movie, but everyone's heard of it. I call it Blair Witch Project syndrome, where everyone would say, have you heard about this movie, Blair Witch Project? Yeah, of course I have. There are commercials for it all the time. Come on, people. But
Elliot's recommendation comes with a heaping helping of irritation.
That's me. But I actually enjoyed it a lot. I found it to be both touching and funny and very well put together. And especially for a movie that's very episodic or picaresque, if you will. It holds – thank
I'll
you. Thank you for doing that. It holds together nicely and has some really great performances in it by some non-professional actors, and I really liked it a lot. So that's what I'd recommend, Beasts of the Southern Wild.
So, guys, we've come to the end of another quest.
This is the laziest quest.
Another quest to sit in a room and record a podcast.
What are you trying to do over
Well,
there?
We found Curly's gold, everybody.
Turns out there was less of it than we anticipated, so we actually lost money on this expedition.
Yeah, turns out he didn't have a lot of gold.
We had to outfit people with mules, pickaxes.
Shit's way expensive.
We had to take that old map and then like burn it around the edges to make it look really old.
Smear coffee all over it.
So I apologize to all of you. But the podcast turned out okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It turns out Curly's gold is inside all of us.
I give it 100.
We shouldn't have eaten Curly's gold.
We thought it was gelt. We thought it was chocolate.
It's really weighing heavy in my stomach.
Yeah, it's not good for you to eat.
So we should go past that probably. So
TMI.
Before the Flophouse, I've been Dan McCoy.
I'm still Stuart Wellington.
And I am as ashamed as can be to admit I am Elliot Kalin.
Good night, everyone.
So I'd say like 97%, maybe 100%. What do you think?
Of what?
This podcast.
Is what?
Is awesome.
'Cause a comedy dynasty. His father was in comedy, yeah. He was in comedy, and his daughter's in comedy.
Like the show Dynasty.
It's
nope.
It's worth listening. Wait, what was that show about?
It was about a comedy dynasty. The Manchu dynasty.
Comedy dinosaurs?
Yeah, that was the show Dinosaurs. Plus comedy.
Let's do this.
What are we doing?